All right, good morning.
Good morning.
Second to last class today, so let's get started. We're going to pick up in our parenting, nurturing marriage through changes, and we'll go from there. Carl, would you lead us in opening prayer, please?
Father in heaven, we give you thanks for this day that you have made, the day that your Son came to earth to die for us, to reconcile us to you, conquered death, and rose. We are thankful that we can be here together today as believers to remember that. We pray now that as we enter the study, that God's steward and his presentation to us be with all the classes and all the teachers as we open your word to consider what you have to teach us about how we live before you and in relationship with one another. Thank you for all of your provisions for us, your continual guidance that you provide. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen. Thank you. All right, we've seen this several times. And then we started, so we're going to do springtime, when love begins, leaving parents home, joining to a partner for life, living and growing together. We talked about that Wednesday night. Summer, raising children, the family expands and the focus changes, teaching and disciplining together, preparing new souls for life and eternity. And in autumn and winter, autumn when children leave, guiding with wisdom while learning to let go, embracing new sons and daughters, and in winter, looking to the future, learning to be a grandparent, building for the future, scattering more broadly, and preparing for eternity. Now, before we get started on autumn, I want to go back and go back to summer, because it felt like we got just a little bit rushed there at the end, and just want to make sure that everybody got to say whatever they wanted to discuss on summer. And I added fostering on here, because I thought there's some people here that might be able to share some wisdom with that, how it changes your life. So how's that changed your life? Not to put you on the spot, but put you on the spot.
When you become a parent overnight,
right?
Instead of more traditional way. But I think you have to very quickly learn to grow together into it and establish a routine quickly that works for everybody.
Yeah, for sure. Challenging. And we talked about managing times and relationships. What I want to, building friendships with Christians, need to focus on that, engaging in service and caring activities. I want to talk more about that a little bit. What are some ideas, or how do you engage in service and caring activities, and how can that help you grow in your marriage? Give you a little think time. Any ideas?
Well, I think you have to include your kids, which sounds obvious, I guess. Maybe it's not obvious, I don't know. But, you know, if you got kids, you got to do something with them. And so I think that means you end up maybe changing what the activities that you engage in to be something that they are interested in, capable of participating in a way that's meaningful to them. So it would change the complexion and scope even of the kinds of things you would do. And it also might depend on the individual kids, what they were interested in, good at, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
I have an example of that.
Sure.
There was Miss Margaret Head, many of you know, came to me at age 83. She said, "Paula, let's have a holiday cookie party and teach these girls."
I remember.
How to bake cookies. And we had the place, and
great example.
You know,
yeah.
She created the whole thing. In fact, she's done a cookie book and how to have a cookie party. So she took the experience she had, combined it with people who I can have a place and do the lunch.
Right.
I know nothing about cookies. And now Darcy and Lily Hamlin, Darcy Johnson and Lily Hamlin are actually taking over her role Sunday to carry it on.
That's a great example.
So it is an example of an older, 83.
83. We're not too old, right?
You know, creating the idea.
Yeah, for sure. Sam?
You know, an example that goes the other way, and Nancy and I laugh about it, we call it baby therapy. Nancy had just had a surgery or something, and one of the young ladies in the congregation brought her 3-month-old baby over to visit. And I don't, you know, maybe we don't always realize how much older people enjoy young children.
Semi-older.
Semi-older. People who have raised their children already. Let me say it that way.
Yeah, there you go.
And so, you know, for those of you with young children,
take them to your house.
Thing is, our house. When I'm gone.
Yeah.
But visiting some of the families who have maybe had a rough spot, or maybe you're lonely, or maybe you're going through different experiences. You can teach your children about service at the same time you're doing a tremendous service just by sharing your children with someone.
For sure. Great example. Another question I want to talk about is maintaining your marriage. How do you maintain your marriage during this phase? What have some of you doing or have done? Some of the older people, what was good for you on how you maintain that marriage? Because maintaining your marriage at every season is going to prepare you, as you see, when you get to, autumn and winter, because you're going to be by yourself again. So how do you maintain that relationship and that marriage? How have you?
First, recognizing that you can't neglect the marriage because the kids are now part of your world. You still have to recognize the value, the importance, the critical nature of that husband-wife relationship, even while you're be distracted from that while raising children. So just recognize that you still got to work on primary relationship in the family.
For sure. And it gets tougher, right? When you have children? Does it get a little tougher? When you have young children?
You have to be purposeful and schedule time, like date nights or things like that. Make sure, because it's
hard. Yeah.
It's hard. If you don't schedule it, then other things fill up your schedule and you don't fit time, you know, for that relationship. So,
yeah. Yes, Chris.
I think it's also very important to be united, to have these conversations, that whatever you're conveying to the kids, that it's not he said, she said, that you're a united front. And I think that goes a long way in marriage, too.
Absolutely. Yeah, very good. And it's not, you have to be thoughtful about it, plan about it, and it's not necessarily cheap anymore to go out, even if you go to a movie and dinner or something like that, plus a babysitter or whatever, so build a Christian network and find friends that help out.
Or don't move away from home.
Or don't move away from home. Back to earlier, right?
Live close to grandparents.
Live close to grandparents. You know, it's funny how when there's no children, they want you to be far away. When there's grandchildren, it's like, yeah, you can be a little closer.
I think that's a good 10-year plan. Move away after college and move back when you have kids. Well, the other thing, babysitting is just the flip side of baby therapy, too.
Exactly, right? For sure.
Stuart, I'll make this observation.
Yes, sir.
Sometimes during this phase, you know, we try to set aside that time to spend with our spouse on a date night or whatever. But that's sometimes hard to schedule. And so then we end up having conversations with our spouse in front of our children at the dinner table or riding in the car. I think it's very important with those children here. Are we talking disparagingly of teachers and coaches or people at church or the preacher? We just have to be very careful because they learn from what they see. And because this is the time that we have to have conversations with our spouses, our children see a lot and learn a lot during that time.
Oh, they really do. They hear everything, right? Yes, sir.
So maybe one more example or furthering the point about making time to spend together. What Meredith and I have found is that if we go out on a date night, it's really like most of the time that we're out before we actually forget about the kids and can concentrate on each other. What we found is that we do better if we can go away for like a weekend or something like that. So that you have more, you it takes about the same amount of time, 3, 4, 5 hours, something like that, to really kind of go, okay, it's just us right now, let's focus on that. But then if you immediately go back to the kids, you're not really spending a lot of quality time together. So we found overnight trips or weekends, something like that.
That's good. Yeah, great idea. You remember the first time you left your first child and you thought you were going to be away maybe for 3 or 4 hours, and after an hour and a half or two, you said, we got to go back, right? Or that maybe that didn't happen with you.
And Mary still hasn't gotten over that one.
Yeah, right.
So one of the things that worked for us, and this is a long time ago when the children were young, was we had a designated night, Thursday night, that whoever was watching the children would stay that night, and that would be our night out together. And it was just planned every Thursday night that would happen. Maybe it was a movie, maybe it was out to dinner, a movie, whatever. And kind of looking forward to that and knowing it was coming, I think was a big help.
For sure, yeah.
Rod, did you find that scheduling that and knowing it was coming every week helped you sort of disengage quicker on that night?
Stop talking about the kids earlier in the day?
Yeah, not really.
Yeah. Okay. Not necessarily. Okay. Very good. I think we've covered some of these. I know we covered that one. Proverbs 38 through 9. Give me neither poverty nor riches. How would you apply that advice to marriage and family? Give me neither poverty nor riches. Does that go back to contentment? In whatever state and stage or season that you were in? Right?
I think he goes on to say that not too much lest I beg and not too, or not too little lest I beg and not too much lest I can't remember what it says.
Yeah.
So the point, I think, yeah, the point is help it not be a distraction either way.
Right, exactly.
Lest I be full and deny you.
That's it. Yeah.
Cool. Right. Thank you. Okay, now we're going to move forward with Autumn. In Proverbs 29:17, correct your son and he will give you rest. Yes, he will give delight to your soul. And in 2 Timothy 1:5, when I call remembrance the genuine faith that is in you, which grew up first in your grandmother Lois and your mother Eunice, and I am persuaded is in you also. And in Proverbs 18:22, he who finds a wife finds a good thing and obtains favor from the Lord. And down in Psalms 128:3-4, your wife shall be like a fruitful vine in the very heart of your house, your children like olive plants all around your table. Behold, thus shall the man be blessed who fears the Lord. So guiding adult children, 101, right? Guiding with a gentle hand. Does it change a little bit as they get a little older? Presenting choices and consequences. Allowing for challenge, failure, and growth. Speaking with a different generation. How do you allow for challenge and failure with your children?
Well, now, one of the things that we've seen a lot of as parents get into this phase with adult children is that you have to deal with adult children differently. You can't just say, no, this is the boundary, you go this far, no more. You have to have boundaries. But as you're teaching them to start making decisions, you have to start allowing them to make decisions. Now, for some of the younger people here in this class, maybe you've seen that from the other side. You know, mom and dad aren't letting me exercise my freedom. Well, imagine that now from the other side. How do you allow the exercise of freedom knowing that they're going to make some really bad choices? So, it's
makes you smiling on that one. I don't know why, Sam. But yeah, but they are. I remember when Andy was learning to drive on a, around 285, and we're coming to church. He was driving to church, and the exit was coming up. And I used to always say, "Okay, Andy, you got to get over and get in this lane." So this time, I just didn't say anything, and right on past it. He remembers the exit after that. But anyway, I don't know that my wife liked that. But anyway, it was like sometimes you got to let them fail or learn in different ways. So. Emptying the nest, preparing them for college and career, helping them prepare to marry or accepting that they won't, embracing new sons and daughters, in-laws, not the end, just a transition. You never really stop parenting. So thoughts on how you embrace new sons and daughters to your family? Any experience and comments there? So that's an important one.
We talked about this in the springtime when, you know, when you're joining to your husband or wife and they came from a different family and now you have to learn to do things different than mom or dad did. This is the flip side of that. Now you're welcoming in a daughter-in-law or a son-in-law who did not come from your family, came from a different background and is going to have different customs and is going to be very potentially nervous about coming into the family, maybe even doesn't cook the ham the same way. You know, that's
right.
Okay.
Yeah, for sure.
The ham can be cooked in different ways. It doesn't matter. But this is, you know, from the parenting side, this looks very differently. But it's the flip side of what we talked about in springtime. As you're getting to know your wife, your in-laws are getting to know you.
Right.
And your child might change as the relationship grows.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, yes, they do.
Suddenly, Nash is not the same as he was when he lived at home.
Right. Yeah.
It's okay.
Good.
Most of it.
Most of it. All right. In Psalms 37:22-25, the steps of a good man are ordered by the Lord, and he delights in his way. Though he fall, he shall not be utterly cast down, for the Lord upholds him with his hand. I have been young, and now am old, yet I have not seen the righteous forsaken, nor his descendants begging bread. And then in Ecclesiastes 12:1-2, remember now your Creator in the days of your youth, before the difficult days come, and the years draw near when you say, I have no pleasure in them. While the sun and the light, the moon and the stars are not darkened, and the clouds do not return after the rain. So now we're starting to become the oldest generation, right? Helping aging or parents and infirm parents. And that's not an easy one. Seeing parents and their generation pass on, continuing to guide independent children. These can be stressful times. If you're not in this season, which probably a lot of you are not, maybe you've seen your parents go through this season, and how has that affected you or helped you?
This is the one we don't like to think about.
No, we don't. But it's good. It happens.
And it can
be difficult.
And it's a time when the love and support of a husband or a wife is pretty critical.
And the draw of your spouse's family is important as well.
You have to start thinking about what are we doing on both sides of the family.
Right.
There starts to become responsibilities that you never thought you'd take on.
Right.
And we get to wonder, you can see the flip side of that.
Right. Yeah, for sure. Yes.
One of the things I was thinking as we're talking about, you know, like guiding independent children, I think I've recognized over the past several years that I really continue to need and appreciate that kind of guidance in the stage I'm in now from, you know, someone like my parents who are, you know, have more experience and everything. But I also recognize that my parents kind of live on a different set of principles, foundational principles that I'm trying to kind of live my life on. And so it's something I recognize, like, I wish I had that, and there's a need for that. You know, it's kind of something I have to work through to, like, that I'm not getting that, really.
Yeah.
So
those conversations and those talks sometimes become so much more meaningful, right? And then we get to this next slide. You remember when you had those, and now you can't have those conversations. But, yeah, very important.
Well, in this respect, the independent children part, you're living by a different set of principles than your parents. And I had that experience as well. How do I continue to show respect while gently being able to say, no, I don't believe that the same way you do?
Gabe, and then I think Gabe and then.
I think it's important to have, like, conversations as soon as possible about, like, with your spouse about their parents and your parents, and as they continue to get older, because that can be a very stressful time. I mean, it can happen so quickly. You know, something happens, a parent has a health emergency, and then all of a sudden you have to make a decision immediately. Okay, are they going to live with, who are they going to live with if they need to be with someone? Are we going to put them in a nursing home? Or are we going to invite them into our home? And once you assume that responsibility, that's huge, because then that's a whole different dynamic. And that can be a huge cause of stress and strife in a marriage if you haven't had any conversations leading up to, like,
prior to it.
Because, like, one person in the relationship could be like, oh, I'm never putting my parents in, you know, a nursing home or assisted living. They're going to live with us no matter what. And then the other one can be like, wait, your parents aren't coming to live with us. So it's, and then you have two sets, you know, most of the time, you know, you have both sides of the family. So it's important to have those conversations before something happens at the drop of a hat, because it can
happen. And like Sam said, we don't like to necessarily think about that or talk about that sometimes. But preparation and those conversations are critical. Ben, I think you had.
Yeah, from my own experience, I can say caring for your parents is something that impacts your children. You know, they see that.
Exactly.
And I was in middle school, high school, that age when my parents were, they spent many years caring for my dad's parents. And I was there, I saw that, and that, I think that's
a good example for you.
Impact. Yeah.
Right. Sam.
Well, we talk about these seasons as if they come in order and on a schedule, but, you know, all of this gets predicated is we don't know our own time, and we don't know the time of our parents or family. So while this tends to be an autumn sort of event,
You know,
Gabe's talking about this. He's not in autumn.
He's not in autumn.
You know, and it can come at any time.
For sure. Career and life changes in this season. Retirement or maybe a second career, planning for time of fixed income can be a big change and stressful at times. Spiritual service, the opportunity to serve as a deacon or elder are good possibilities. Increased opportunities to serve or teach, and teaching and guiding younger Christians. Kind of like your example too with teaching cooking, but there's other ways to teach with classes and so forth as well. And in challenges to the marriage, learning to be alone together again, our bodies aging and changing, potential health issues, emotional needs change. I don't know if many of you remember Ken Morrison, but Brother Ken, the late Ken, he used to say, if I had known it was going to be this tough on my body, I would have taken better care of myself when I was younger. Right? I mean, because when we're young, we all tend to do a lot of different things that maybe are tougher on our bodies, sports and all that included, but they can wear it on you as you get older. So, any thoughts on any of these? Yes?
Just one other thing. This passage in Psalms, being now on the other side of this discussion, I've been young and now I'm old.
Uh-huh.
And I found myself saying that to my boys. But when I was young, there wasn't an internet, you know, and the world was a very different place. And so the fact that I've been young doesn't mean I necessarily know what it means to be young now. And I'm constantly surprised by the things I learn from Nash and Aaron about the world they live in that's very different from mine. And the advice that I give them is, you know, it's not always right.
That's for sure. Yeah, our kids don't know what a corded phone is, for the most part. I mean, there's all kind of things, but yeah, interesting. And this learning to be alone together again, remember we kind of talked about this, this is maintaining your marriage throughout all these seasons. All right, what is different about guiding and interacting with adult children and teenagers? And you talked a little bit about that, Sam. And then what types of advice do you find that they are seeking? How do they receive it? Is the same advice that you would like to give them? And you mentioned that a little bit. How's even more valuable, right? Do you find the communication with this younger generation is different than communicating with your own generation? It is. Sam talked about that a little bit, right? Text, right? Don't call me. Text. Communication can be different. How do you like to be communicated to? The younger generation.
Some
someone calls me, I think something's wrong.
Right.
It's an emergency, and then
if somebody calls, oh, what's wrong? Yeah.
Yeah. Why are you calling me?
Okay. What else? We're not going to call you later.
Sorry.
Something's wrong. Yeah. That's good.
If somebody texts me first and says, can you call me? Then,
it's okay. But just get a surprise. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Stuart, I just did that this morning. David Maxson sent out his daily email.
Yes.
Daily devotion. And if you send it out to the whole family, it doesn't look like you're pointing to each. There might be one, needing this, but if you send it to everyone, it's not so pointed.
Yes, for sure, 100%. Yeah.
And then the message is very, and coming from Omar, it's not indicting.
Right.
It's just encouraging.
Agreed.
Loving.
Yeah.
I'm trying to be loving. So I do group emails to those who have an email address.
Yeah,
and
great
they,
idea.
They may not open it,
But that's okay.
But it's there.
But it's there. What advice would you give your son or daughter who's considering a mate? How do you think that's likely to be received? Anybody considering a mate? Did you seek that advice?
For where you were. If you're waiting to the moment that you're about to get married so you can get back, you've waited too late.
Waited too late.
It needs to be a lifelong process, and it needs to start with my parents and then me as a parent of my children instilling those things in them. So when it comes, certainly there's still some advice to be garnered there at the very end. But those things hopefully have been ingrained in the
along the way.
Person is prepared at this point.
Yeah.
That advice has been given all along.
Good point. We talked about this a little bit. What challenge can you expect to face with your own parents in this phase of life? And Gabe mentioned that. Very important to talk about that, have conversations about that early on. And then what experiences have you had from both sides as an adult and then as a parent of a young adult? Adam, you have to have some lessons there.
No, I would just say expectations, like knowing each other's expectations and communicating that ahead of time is very helpful, because things happen, and if you don't, like Gabe was saying, if you're not talking through these things and planning ahead, it causes a lot of stress during those experiences.
It really does. And then some of the largest changes to your marriage relationship when children leave home, when they start going off to college. Kevin, didn't your mom and dad miss you greatly when you went off to school? Did you miss them greatly? Who do you think missed more?
They probably missed me a little bit more.
Probably, yeah. That's true. I think parents do, right? Sometimes kids that go off to school, it's like, I'm great.
I had not anticipated how much Kevin's siblings would miss him.
Yeah, it just not impacts the parents, but the siblings. And preparing the siblings for that. And they can start trying to create a little distance before they go off, too. I remember that phase. It's like, what's going on? It's like they're just trying to create that distance before they go off to school or whatever. The qualifications for serving as an elder include successfully raising children and managing a household. Do these qualifications make sense in light of this, some of this discussion? And they do, very much.
I think it's very important in Bible class to teach children when we're discussing elders and deacons that they can disqualify their talented fathers.
Mm-hmm.
They can disqualify how they're behaving. I think that needs to be taught very early.
True. Now, this is a fun one for me. It's the phase of life where you should now expect to have a lot of free time. Why or why not? Even in the winter phase, I'd ask that question.
Is it a phase where you just have so much more free time? Everybody younger is saying, oh, absolutely, right? The older people are like, Sam.
Yeah, I was going to say, I retired from my job about 7 months ago, and I think I'm busier now than I was when I was working. Part of it is it takes a lot longer to get things done. It used to be really quick to do.
Yeah.
But, you know, you never stop parenting. You never stop what you're doing. And, you know, I used to think when retirement was somewhere in the far-off distant future that we'd just be, off fishing someplace or something. That's not happening.
Not yet, anyway. Not yet. Yeah. All right, let's get into winter. Those who are planted in the house of the Lord shall flourish in the courts of our God. They shall still bear fruit in old age. They shall be fresh and flourishing. And then in Job 32:7, age should speak, and multitude of years should teach wisdom. But there is a spirit in man, and the breath of the Almighty gives him understanding. Great men are not always wise, nor do the aged always understand justice. Then in Isaiah 43, listen to me, O house of Jacob, and all the remnant of the house of Israel have been upheld by me from birth, who have been carried from the womb, even to your old age. I am he, and even to gray hairs I will carry you. I have made, and I will bear, even I will carry, and I will deliver you. The golden years. Back just to the two of you again, with a lot with more time, supposedly, together. Retirement or reduced workload. Reduced ability due to age and health now, and death or disability of a spouse potentially. The family changes, enjoying children and grandchildren, maintaining the agreed boundaries of their family, right? How close is that? How often? Modeling Christian behavior for grandchildren, training and nourishing them as you can, taking those opportunities where they may be, encouraging them, setting those examples. And in spiritual service, more time to serve as an elder, teacher, deacon, more time for hospitality and visitation, modeling grace and godliness for a future generation. Minimize complaining. Minimize complaining. What do you guys think on these? About your parents or the other? Any thoughts? Yes, Chad.
Just offer this. It's very important. While I'm not quite to that stage, I'm getting closer. But it's very important that we're not thinking when we reach that stage that, well, I've done my part, I finished. I'm going to let the next generation deal with these things.
Mm-hmm.
Paul, in 2 Timothy chapter 4, at the end of his life, he said, I am now ready to be offered. I think some translations say, I am being poured out. The drink offering. So even at those very moments, his last hours, his last days, he was still serving. He was still working. And I love that passage because it's the past, present, and future that's there. I am ready to be offered. Verse 7 says, I have fought a good fight. I have finished my course. I have kept the faith. But he wasn't finished because he was still serving.
Still serving.
And because of those things, he says, there is yet future laid up for me.
Right.
The crown of righteousness.
That's great.
And I think it's very important at this stage of life that we remember those things.
Absolutely. Yeah. We have more opportunities to do more, which is wonderful. Winter life, redeeming the time. Golden text for the golden age. Has anybody heard of this book? By a friend of mine. Sewell Hall. If you haven't read it, maybe you're a little young for it, but it's a great book. Really good read. And this is throughout the book, 2 Corinthians 4:16-8. He quotes this, therefore we do not lose heart, even though our outward man is perishing, yet the inward man is being renewed day by day. For our light affliction, which is but for a moment, is working for us a far more exceedingly and eternal weight of glory. While we do not look at the things which are seen, but at the things which are not seen. For the things which are seen are temporary, but the things which are not seen are eternal.
I look at some of the examples we have among us, Sewell being one of them, or Miss Katie. people who are definitely into this phase of their life and still going.
Yeah.
And still making a difference.
One of his, there's several questions, like after every chapter, and this is a great kind of workbook study, but one of the questions is, how would you, at this stage in your life, how would you rank on a scale from 0 to 10 your physical health? And how would you rank your spiritual health on a scale of 1 to 10? And which one is more important? So many good. So is this a season of life you look forward to? Those of us who are getting closer? All right. Do you look forward to that, younger people? You do, Clayton. Nice. Christy, yes. Why?
Because it's an opportunity to give back even more. You know, I love to pour into people, and I feel like so many times I'm restricted by other things, other commitments, and I just, you know, I look forward to the time where I can do more of it.
Yeah. I agree. I mean, is there more free time? Yes. I mean, but you really get to pick and choose. You have availability to do those things more than I did before, now that I'm retired, so, which is good. Is retirement the end of the work or just a change in direction? Yes. Yes. It's both, right? It is the end of work, but it's a change in direction. A good change in direction.
Now you work for free.
Now you can double my pay and it's still for free. Yeah, for sure. You work for free. But planning for that, hopefully, we talked about that in another season, planning for that financially and getting ready for that as we get to this stage. What are the biggest changes you might expect in your marriage at this season of life relative to the earlier seasons? What do you think? You're not thinking about this now, a lot of you. What do you think the changes will be?
It's an opportunity to grow stronger spiritually together.
Yes.
It is a time you have a lot more time with your spouse. You know, and you're really doing different things. You mentioned earlier about, you know, wow, why don't I have more time? Suddenly you find yourself, as Clayton said, you're not earning a paycheck, you got a fixed income, you find yourself doing things you used to pay for, you know, when you were working.
Right.
And some of them you don't do so well.
Right, yeah.
And with that, your partner helping, you understanding both sides a little bit better should make it work a lot easier.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, Jack. And then Kelsey,
marriage is till death do us part. And foremost, if they have a successful marriage, this is the time.
Correct.
When someone's going to be alone. And so being prepared for that. Now, there needs to be some discussions between the husband and wife even before that time. But there needs to be preparation for being alone.
Yeah, absolutely. Communication is a key, right? That's been through all throughout communicating. Yes, Kelsey.
Well, I was going to say communication becomes a little bit harder because you literally can't hear each other.
What?
So I that's just something my grandparents went through where, like, my grandma literally couldn't hear anything he ever said. And she was just okay with it, to be honest, but you frustrated smile. Him a little bit.
Smile and shake your head?
Yeah.
What? Yes. That happens. That happens. Can we still be useful? We kind of talked about this. And is it appropriate to ask that question to somebody that's in this phase of their life? We can be. What activities can you take on in this season that may be difficult or impossible earlier? What can we do now that we couldn't do? It's just a lot for me. It's just more time, the time availability to do some things I couldn't do before, for sure, with traveling and everything.
There's an opportunity to do a lot more mentoring because you've got some experience worth sharing, maybe. But again, this is one of those things that if you've not been preparing for it, you may not have much worth sharing. But you certainly have the time, and you certainly have had the life experiences. And hopefully you've learned from it. and can start to make a difference for someone else.
Okay, good. What are some concerns most of us have for the future of our children and grandchildren? This is a big one. What are those concerns?
Make sure they get the right preschool.
Make sure they get the right preschool.
You know, that seems so important at one time.
It did, right?
And
had to wait in the line or put your name in months early to get in the right preschool.
Yeah. I'm concerned about society in general and the influences that they have to get there around. They have other, not to say that I didn't have some of those pressures as a kid, but I think it's even more so, more prevalent today in different ways.
Yeah, it just changes, right? Your childhood was just different than your parents' childhood with what was going on at the time, right? And then your children's is different from yours. I mean, the kids probably get tired of us telling the same old story that, you know, you walk to school up here both ways and all that. But you could ride your bike all over town. You wouldn't come home until dinner. You never kind of came into the house. You come home from school, you'd be out. And you'd come home for supper time or whatever. But now, the neighborhoods and everything else, and you can't ride a bike without a helmet. shouldn't do a lot of those things, right? It's different. And how's that going to be different for your kids and generation? What are your concerns and thoughts on that? Go with the flow. Yes.
I was just going to offer that I think, you know, don't underestimate the impact that grandparents can have on grandchildren. It's strange. This, maybe it's because there's this, you know, maybe some more time to share in a casual, you know, more intimate way or something. But this often there's like kind of a unique connection between grandchildren and their grandparents, and sometimes they can get through to them in ways that parents can't.
For sure.
And so, you know, they kind of connect with them more in certain ways.
Right. Yes.
So just, you know, take advantage of that and often, you know, use it for positive impact on their life.
Agree.
So it might be because grandparents never have to be the bad guy.
That could be part of it. Yeah.
But related to that, one of the things that I appreciate most about my grandparents, my mom's parents in particular, was that they were always very careful to enforce the rules that my parents had for us. And so, as a kid, you know, you have this idea that, like, oh, I'm going to my grandparents' house, I can do whatever I want, you know. And so maybe we felt a little bit cheated by that. But we still had my dad, and he let us do whatever we wanted. But looking back, I really appreciate that consistency.
Right.
Right. Because not only because it enforced the points that my parents were trying to get across to us, but because it demonstrated that we are accountable to the same standard all the time. And so it modeled in my parents and then in my grandparents, made it a lot easier for me to see that this is not arbitrary. My parents didn't just make these rules up. There's a higher purpose and calling for our standard of behavior here. And I really appreciated that.
Yeah, very good. Then our last question. What is the most serious danger that they face? Not preschool, I'm guessing. Right? A lot of concerns.
I think a big concern in their spiritual lives is always our number one. But I have some concerns about technology in their lives. And no personal contact. Especially in helping others.
Right. Technology is big.
It's just a good substitute for, you know, not talking to somebody sometimes. And I think that's a big
thank you, Ron. Thank you for saying that.
Yeah. I mean, how many times you go to dinner and you look across at another table, hopefully, and a couple or whoever, and the kids, they're on there and they're all on a device.
We were even talking last night about, like, AI, artificial intelligence, and how, you know, which direction is that going? You know, is that going to be taking people's jobs? You know, just things like that, too. And how
even businesses use that as a way to communicate with clients as opposed to talking to them themselves. You know, so it's a growing problem.
Yeah, for sure. So, Carla,
I was going to make a comment on what Rod said. As someone who has worked in that industry for 35 years, specifically the communications industry, I see it as a double-edged sword. I'm not old enough to remember the advent of the telephone, but I remember some of the commercials and the promotions for it was, you know, reach out and touch someone, call and just say hi.
Right.
It enables you to be closer to people that you're farther away from. It also enables you to use that as a substitute for not going to see them.
Yeah, so there's good parts of it. Maybe FaceTime with your grandkids when you can't see them regularly, right?
Mm-hmm.
And reach out and touch somebody.
To the point now where somebody made a comment earlier, I forget what it was, but if you receive a call, you think something's wrong. That troubles me that if I call you, if I want to speak to you, you think, well, there's a problem.
Right.
Now we're moving to the point where I don't have to interact with you at all. I can have my virtual person talk to your virtual person. And I don't have to have any contact with you. And it troubles me.
Like, these are all, like, really valid concerns, but I think the good thing to remember here is that they're children. A 14-year-old cannot buy a phone on their own. So I think, like, if, like, we as a group are concerned, it's, like, also up to us. I'm not a parent, but I remember being parented, and there were a lot of things I was not allowed to do, was not allowed to have.
Right.
Until specific ages, and they really kept up with that. That meant I went to school, and I didn't have a phone, and maybe that might have been a little bit uncomfortable for my mom. She was more concerned that I didn't grow up with all this technology all the time.
That's a tough one, right? So, one more.
I was
going
to say about the phone thing, I like to call clients. It's interesting when I call, or friends, you know, when I call them, like, if you wish them a happy birthday, they're like, oh my goodness, I'm so glad you know, if they're older, so glad you call me, thank you so much, because sometimes they're family in their room. If I call the younger generation, it's so interesting to hear your Annie's comment, because there was a younger client I called, and he's like, do you call everyone? Like,
yeah.
I mean, it was really, like, he was like, why are you calling me?
Right.
And it's like, yeah, I didn't call everyone. It's just so interesting that was a revelation to me that for the younger generation is that they think there's something wrong.
I know. It's growing. Seasons. Thank you very much.